got stopped out right away. And he says, well, that's okay. I get stopped out about 50% of the time, but you know, my risk to reward is really good and it's profitable and whatever. So I said, okay, we did that for a while. And I says, let's go live. Okay. See what those fuckers are going to do to me? You got to watch them here. Man, they're just after me.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach-churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening.
Hello, everybody. How are you all doing? Welcome back to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. My name is Kyle. That's Baba Yaga and Bear Goes Long. But who gives a crap about us? Because we're welcoming back the China Shop's longest patron, author of A Private Conversation with Money, Rich Friesen. How are you doing, Rich?
Oh, I'm doing great. I mean, this is California. Perfect weather this month. It's like 80 degrees, no humidity, no bugs, no flies, no mosquitoes, no thunderstorms. I mean, it's like, other than the fact that our state doesn't run very well, the weather is cooperating.
What about there's nothing on fire anymore. Is that all been taken care of, hopefully?
Not that I know of.
All right. So, I know that Grand Canyon was having some issues. My wife's old childhood lodge that she used to hang out with burned down.
Oh yeah. Yeah. What a shame.
Yeah, I know.
That was sad.
Wow, it's good to hear that you're doing good, Rich. So little birdie whispered to me, or word on the street is that you are slowing things down, retiring this year.
Yeah, I am. I'm giving everybody the options for all my materials online. Got good deals going. I'm going to continue my private coaching, because I just love my clients and I just love seeing them progress and doing that. But other than that, being more of a grandfather, more of a husband.
Is the wife
after all these 50, well, I don't know, maybe it's not gonna work out as well. Hey buddy, here I am.
Right, you're here every day.
Ooh,
now
back. Ooh, wait Rich.
You gotta find something to do. So are you working on any new books then, or like, what's going to be the,
yeah, well, I've, you know, got Healing the Political Divide. That's been kind of a slow motion.
Oh God, we need that.
I'm working on a live workshop, about, the black swans, about how we tend not to see what we need to see. We have our belief system. So how do we get out of, this is for longer term investors. How do we get out of that bubble that we've locked ourselves into and able to see different events, to be able to see the tells, the indicators that we're going down a particular path? Because as you know, given the political economic situation, we can move to some pretty dramatic extremes, or have a wonderful future for at least until the debt collapses us.
Yeah.
Fair. So you're putting together a group then for that. Is that what
Yeah. So it's going to be a group where by everyone locates the different tells for, let's say, three different paths. What we do at each tell, low risk at the low indicator tells, the ones that aren't really there, but we match the steps and risk to the level of the tell. Mm-hmm. But they're preordained. In other words, if this happens, well, then I do this. If this happens, then I do this. So having rehearsed it, having announced it, having worked through with other people who have similar paths and tells, what that does is it changes the brain. Mm-hmm. So rather than, it doesn't mean much. Ooh, this doesn't mean much. Oh, I'm too late for this. Oh, it's already moved. What am I going to do? And I know from personal experience that I have made some personal investing decisions simply because I waited until it smacked me in the head. And then, of course, that was the exact time not to make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
The inflection point.
You know, I love the idea because I find that most of the mistakes that I make or the problems that I run into are in situations that I hadn't considered yet. Like mm-hmm. the plan, you only plan for so many different things, but the more scenarios I think you can work through, think about, theorize, you know, walk through in your head, like the more reps you can get like that, I think the more likely you are to act in a more rational way, I guess, when the situation arises.
Exactly. In other words, your brain has already rehearsed it and gone through it.
Yeah.
You know, in the martial arts, the rehearsal, the body memory, the physical muscular memory, how we react. So having developed that muscle memory with other people who, when you do it verbally and other people reflect on it, it makes it real and able to make those decisions. And what you said, I think, is really important, is that it's rational. In other words, you're not emotionally reacting because you've already rehearsed it.
Yep. So how do you plan for everything, though? That's the tough one, right?
Yeah, well, you can't. Well, that's a really good point. You can't plan for everything. But what is important is that your brain has the flexibility to be able to see it. Because as you know, economics, psychology, climate, all that is a complex adaptive system. And a complex adaptive system's where you have hundreds of inputs, but they affect each other. At every step of the way, this affects this. Well, then this changes this, and this affects that. And there's no way you can have a linear projection that can handle that complexity. Even AI, I think, is going to have a problem with that level of complexity, at least for a while.
Sounds like chaos theory to me.
Yes, exactly. Chaos theory.
It sounds like the way Malcolm described that in Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Showing my age a little bit.
Life will out.
Well, Rich, I think we initially decided we were going to invite you up here to talk about managing burnout, or at least that was the one that we'd all voted on.
Okay.
But I don't want to move on from this unless anybody else has any other questions.
Burnout.
I think that burnout would be a great, probably like a great diving board. Who knows what water we'll end up in before we're done, but I think that'll get us rolling in a direction, yeah?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. So how do you want to tackle this then, Baba? I mean, I think this was kind of your suggestion here.
Well, I was thinking through the lens of the last couple of years and then contrasting maybe some of how I took a little bit of time off after we kind of pulled the pressure off of live trading every day, sharing screen, communicating with a group of people. And now it's just, you know, it's just me and my screen and my own business. And I didn't realize how trading and thinking about the market had dominated so much of my mental capacity and space. I didn't realize, like, when I took a week and went to the beach and then came back and then didn't trade a lot and then took a little bit more time off. And I just started, I realized, like, man, I feel like there's a different pace that I can function at in the market than what I have been for the last couple of years. That's still rewarding and still serves me. But when I stopped the room, it felt like a very selfish decision, because I think somewhere subconsciously I knew that I needed that. And I needed a little bit of break. I needed to be selfish with, in a sense, with what I needed. And I don't think I would have been able to verbalize that then, but after a couple months now of, you know, some flexibility, time away from being under the gun, you know, that added pressure, man, it's been really enjoyable. And so I just wondered, you know, about how do you process, Rich? How do you think about burnout? How do you think all of that? What, you know, when we think of this as a career, like how do you protect against that? How do you listen to yourself? What metrics do you think through? What lenses do you think through when you kind of approach that idea or that topic? And yeah, I'd just love to hear your thoughts.
Well, that is such a great topic, because I think what you've just done is hit at the core of the issue most traders have. So when we look at burnout, what I see is this. I got to do it. I got to trade. I got to make money. My dream of the Lamborghini, the house on the beach, the beautiful woman, the trophy wife, my father's approval, all these things come together. Well, a short story. A client in the Bay Area. Almost all my clients are international, but this one was in the Bay Area, so I went to his office. And he said, I do so well for 2 or 3 days, and then I just give it away. And you could just feel the tension in his face. So I said, okay, let's sit down and trade. Let's do a demo account. So he traded, set it to demo, so there's no real money involved. And he looked and he pointed and says, you see that? Okay, so that's a setup that's coming, but you can see that it's not quite there. So we let it go. Another, well, that's not quite, okay, now here's a setup. Okay, it hits all my parameters. He clicked the buy button, got stopped out right away. And he says, well, that's okay. I get stopped out about 50% of the time, but, you know, my risk to reward is really good and it's profitable and whatever. So I said, okay, we did that for a while. And I says, let's go live. Okay. See what those fuckers are going to do to me? Man, you got to watch them here. Man, they're just after me. Okay, watch. Watch what happened. Now, here's the setup, and they're going to stop it out. They're going to run the goddamn stops.
Oh, I felt that flip. I felt that flip.
Oh, gosh. I love that.
Oh, my
so,
gosh.
So, wow. Working with him after a few sessions, he had his father behind him. You're never going to make anything of yourself. You didn't go to dental school like I wanted you to. This trading is just your dream. You don't do what you're supposed to do. You don't settle down. You just have this thing that you can do whatever you want, whenever you want. I was an immigrant. I came here with nothing. I worked 3 jobs, whether I liked it or not. And here you are just screwing around.
Wow.
So in the demo thing, he didn't feel that. As soon as he turned it live, his dad was behind him. And those voices. Now, what I use is the golden keys. First is awareness. So once we discovered that voice, then we could go to the next step, an acceptance. Yes, Dad, I understand where you're coming from, the filter you have on life, the hard work you did, and this seems so easy. It's almost like cheating, isn't it? Yes, it's like cheating, because hard work and discipline are where we all need to be. I understand. Let's talk about the difference. So we went through some imaginary conversations with his dad. So then whenever he started trading and the dad was behind him, thanks, Dad. I appreciate the hard work that made the family possible the way we are now. And this is my path. Boom, it was like this transformation. So we talk about stress. Now, that was just one example. But for me, what stress is I have a goal. I have to get there. If I don't, I need willpower to follow the system. Oh, I didn't follow it. Oh, here's a trade that's going to work. I know it. So what is the result of that? Burnout.
Yeah.
So how do we find peace with ourselves? How do we find rapport with ourselves? First of all, is awareness. Awareness of the voices, awareness of the shoulds, awareness of the dream that we attach. A lot of traders, every tick against them is a tick against their dreams, their hopes. We got some nods.
No, I know exactly what you're feeling. Yeah, 100%. I felt
every
that.
Every tick in their direction is going to come true. Oh my God, I've got it. I've got it now. I can start playing big.
Anticipation.
So once we're aware of that, we go to awareness, we go to acceptance. Okay, I'm having this feeling. We allow ourselves to experience it, then we let it go. And then is agency. Is I am an agent of my experience. I can experience all these different things in real time. Let them come and let them go. So now we're in rapport with ourselves. So one of the exercises I do with my private clients is I have them build an imaginary trader's home. Sometimes the mountain, the beach, wherever it is. And sometimes it's all glass and modern. Sometimes it's logs
rustic.
And log cabins or whatever it is. And then I have them approach it. Look back and see who's criticizing them. Who is unhappy with them? Dad, mom, family, wealth is bad. People with money are bad. Whatever those voices are. And then we slowly work up to the house, put our hand on the door. What's going on? I don't deserve it. I'm not worthy to step into this house. Then we can go back to a deeper place and a deeper conversation. And eventually we get to the place we can open the door, go to the trading room. I'm worthy. The other people in my life, the voices in my head, in fact, a lot of those voices they made up. If I have them actually go talk to that people, even in their imagination, the dad will say, listen, son, if you're successful, I love it. I know I worked hard. This is not a condemnation of me, but I love you and I appreciate it. Whereas the voice in the head still had, made up a critical voice. So once we get to that point, then we have rapport with ourselves, our feelings, our emotions. And the next step is process versus outcome. And we can talk about that if you have any questions.
No, that's, well, so just even hearing you talk through that, one of the things we discussed is there were a lot of times where I would maybe trade outside of the times that we would be scheduled to be streaming. And then I would effectively be finished for all real purposes. You know, I've taken the trade opportunities that I was hoping would developed at a time when I wasn't on the screen. And then when we would go live in the room and talk through things, one, I would feel like that wasn't something to share because I didn't want to have a bunch of people telling a bunch of people, oh yeah, I made these great trades earlier this morning or last night. Like that's not, no one wants to hear about that. That's, the whole point of us being together is to trade together. I think another one of the challenges then would be that I would feel, I would internalize this expectation without even realizing it, that I needed to be active during that time window.
Oh yeah.
Or, say we get towards the end of a week and I've had a week that's, I've followed my systems and the outcome, I've been rewarded with, what did you call it? Certificates of appreciation.
Oh, you remember. Yeah. Excellent.
And so I've
the market says, thank you for moving it in the right direction.
Yeah. It said thank you enough times that I felt like, I high-fived it and I appreciated it too. We're all good, but we still have another day or two to, have a room with people and trade. And I would, again, without realizing it, I think just feel some measure of expectation. And I could have never verbalized any of that until I took a substantial break away from that and just traded when things were where I wanted them and when things were developing the way that I most preferred it. And my frequency of trading went down. My risk reward profile looks better. My percentage looks better. And my attitude towards everybody in my sphere of influence and world is probably, twice as good as it was before. I don't think I could have verbalized that because I had been doing that so long. That was I just associated all that with trading. The whole thing, the whole thing is trading.
Yep. It kind of sounds a lot like what we were just talking about with Rich's new project, where you're stuck in this, like where incremental changes are happening, and you're just not able to see the big picture of where it's taking you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wonder that environment. It's not that it's not fruitful or beneficial, but I don't know. I felt really bad about saying, hey, I think I want to wrap up this season of my trading journey and just focus on my own self and my own trading apart mm-hmm. from being super exposed. And I felt a little bit guilty about that on the one hand. On the other hand, I feel like I'd earned the right to do that because mm-hmm. if I'm not trading, at least one of the things I value is flexibility and freedom with my schedule and my life. I have 5 children, young children, relatively young, I would say. And it's like, if one of the goals is some measure of freedom with schedule, if I just lock myself in every day, no matter what, I'm going to be there.
I have to be here from this time to this time.
Like that's not fun on vacation when everyone goes to the beach and I stay at the computer,
Right.
But I just didn't, I think I put all of that together as one. That it had all been, that had been my approach and the way I had done things for so long that I didn't realize, honestly, like trading can be pretty fun. It doesn't have to be, not that it was like a drag, but definitely had taken some measure of a toll that I was beginning to feel was an inequitable exchange. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not mm-hmm. financially, but with the whole of my life.
The time.
Yeah. The important part. Yeah.
If you go back to doing a group and live trading, this is really an important lesson that if you can inspire and invite others to step into the world that you've discovered since you took time off, that is one of the biggest gifts. So you can say, I am going to do just a train of thoughts. I notice I'm feeling pressured right now to trade, or I notice that I want to prove to you that all the good trades that I do, or whatever it is, and say, this is the major mindset struggle that traders have, and I'm going to demonstrate it to you so that you are able to see the possibility of real time of awareness, of accepting this. I don't beat myself up. And then practicing with this awareness, creating agency from a higher level. What a gift to every trader who you're working with if you can demonstrate that process.
Did Rich just talk you out of retirement, Baba?
I literally just thought, I mean, we could probably do something like that this fall when things slow down, kids are back in school. Maybe we hit a couple sessions back up. And
Baba, it doesn't have to be anything. You don't have to commit to it.
You don't have to make it formal. It
doesn't have to be every day.
I'll tell you, it has been shocking. The frequency of trades has been so low. I mean, 3 trades, 2 trades a day, 11 trades on a week, 8 trades on a week.
Mm-hmm.
And the fruit from that has been, I mean, it's just great. It's like my sweet spot. It's great. And I think the other piece is decision fatigue. Or even just being sharp, really being sharp in a moment, and being able to, have the plan is so clear because I haven't entertained 27 other ideas prior to the one thing that I really mm-hmm. am looking for happening. And so it's so easy to just click and whatever. I mean, I'm not even usually watching whenever whatever happens after I click happens. I mean, it's pretty common for me to click in and step away or click in and sit. It's just been it's really been enjoyable, man. Like I have really enjoyed the last, stretch of time. And yeah, I don't think I realized how everything else involved in what we were doing, it actually did take some type of a toll. And I wasn't aware of it. Some type of a toll. There was a cost to that. There was an emotional
capital,
cost to that. And we talked a lot about and still talk about, making good decisions and modeling good behavior was one of my things that I was, or I would say appropriate behavior. We're not going to double down because we lost a trade. We're not going to trade way bigger size than we should. None of that kind of stuff. None of that was happening. But just the freedom has been really, really nice.
That is so valuable. If you can invite others into that state and to see how you made those steps, the psychological pieces you put in place, the language you used, the invitation to more internal rapport with yourself. If you can model that, especially in real time or in any other way for others, that's a real gift, because once you've started tasting that and it feels so much better, Oh my gosh, the invitation, that's personal and powerful. Well done.
Well, I love the way that I go back and listen to random things that you've been on. I would say probably bi-weekly, and that the language of invitation has always stood out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's such a helpful thing. And another way that I've said it is like permission, because as I did like an autopsy on my trading over the last, and I didn't like stop trading. I took a few weeks off and then just, stopped trading in the room live. And as I was kind of autopsying that process, it was almost like I had to, the way that language I've used to describe it is like, give myself permission to be selfish and do what I think I need to do for me. And I feel like that was kind of a hard decision to make. I mean, I was like, should I do that?
Sure. What, when you're growing up, who was the one that expressed negativity toward people who were selfish?
Your dad was a preacher, wasn't he? Our pastor?
Yeah.
Another PK.
You as well. I've heard you mention that on the side from time to time. We can do a whole separate show just about that whole journey. But I think so. I mean, I do think that I, just as a value in general, I valued a generosity. I think it's a beautiful thing. I think when people are generous with their time or their energy or what they know, I mean, this podcast with you, what a generous thing that you sit down with us and share your time. It's a valuable thing for you. You have a family.
But he was also able to be selfish enough to tell us he needed to reschedule when he was stuck in traffic too, remember?
Yeah. Yeah, no. It actually made me almost cry. I was like, oh, no. So I think I value that. And I just thought, I don't want to come off like.
There's a difference between I should do this, I should help them out. Some of my traders even have the underlying belief that's unexpressed that if I make money, somebody loses money.
Zero sum game. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a zero sum game. Now it's not a zero sum game, obviously, but that voice is, you don't deserve it. If you take it, somebody else, if you make a lot of money, somebody else isn't, it's not fair that you have money and others don't. So there's that kind of message against selfishness. And there's another feeling like you have, like life is abundant. I love to share. It feels good to be generous, to help people, to spend my time, energy, money with them. Oh my God, I have the ability to do that. It's not guilt. It's not shoulds. What it is expressing the highest level of humanity that you can. But underneath that is taking care of yourself and your family and your kids. You know, if you start, for me, if you start taking care of the world and not taking care of this, you and I need nothing. To sit down and have a problem.
Right.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to take care of yourself first. Definitely. Does some of that element also, you touched on the self-worth factor. That feels like a different side of that. You know, I don't deserve that. I haven't earned this. That some of those pieces could come from self-worth as well.
Yeah. Well, the typical client that comes to me, their equity curve looks like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm.
What happens here? What happens at the peak? And the peak is, oh my God, I am stepping into a whole new world. No client, not one, ever has come to me and said, Rich, I have the potential to be really wealthy and very successful just by following a process and incrementally increasing my size. And I want to make sure I'm psychologically prepared to step into the world of wealth. But I would say 70% of my successful clients at some point hit a barrier. And that barrier could be, oh my God, if I'm wealthy, all the taxes, all the stuff, my relatives are going to come to me, want money. I'm going to be conflicted because my dad, an immigrant, worked 3 jobs and I did it so easily. It's not right. If I'm taking money, somebody else is losing it. I need to be a philanthropist. Some of them say, I need to be a philanthropist. Right away, I go, wait. That's coming from try to assuage guilt as versus the joy of generosity. So preparing to be wealthy, that's not trivial. That is changing our whole identity, our social structure, and even our friends, our spouses. In other words, we all tend to have friends in the same social and economic strata. To step out of that, that can be managed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, once you say, okay, so we're going to step out of it, how do we manage our friends who are poor? How do we manage all the taxes and wealth and stuff that comes to it? How do we manage people coming to you for money that you don't want to give it to them? So all that stuff, again, if we can pre-experience it and experience it from our system for our personal power and handle it creatively and well, then we can go through those barriers. But if we wait until the wealth is there and we haven't psychologically prepared ourselves, the equity curve looks like this. Oh my God, boom.
So you're saying if you don't think through the scenarios, when you actually get to the scenario and it becomes more possible, you're going to react in ways that you probably don't want.
Exactly. You said it better, more concisely than I did.
I can relate I've done some thinking about what would happen if like this podcast ever got more successful. And like, I'm not sure that I'm ready to go under the microscope of like having that many more eyes on me, you know, like, I don't know how much I could take a bunch of negative comments every day or things like that. Like
okay. So what we're going to do, we're going to get together, all 4 of us,
yeah,
and we're going to pound you with negative comments and criticisms. We are going to go to your blackest, darkest hole. We are going to give you the intel.
I try. I try.
So normal Friday, is that what we're saying?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I want to make a joke.
Right.
I want to make a joke that's probably actually not a joke. Is new client comes to Rich and says, Rich, I'm making too much money. Can you help me with that?
Oh, just.
Yeah.
Because that's essentially what they're doing if you reframe it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've seen that personally when, you know, I have a really huge trade and you know, just the trade just clicks, mm-hmm. everything's perfect mm-hmm. and it closes out and I look over the P&L number and I'm just like, panic.
Oh, stay right there. Where do you experience it? If I stepped inside your body, what would I notice at that point where you used the word panic? What would I notice physiologically?
It's been so long, I can't see it.
We can go back. So when was the last time you had a big trade that really clicked?
I think you talked about one last week.
Did. But now I'm trying to put myself where I was at on that. That was a really positive one. That was not over an overwhelming one.
Mm-hmm.
That was one where the process just clicked and the price moved into the spot that, you know, the plan. And, mm-hmm. I took the trade, hit a profit number that was pretty significant and enough for me to go, you know what? That's a good day. Just turn it off.
Excellent. So you didn't experience that panic. But
no,
in the past, you remember experiencing that panic.
Yeah, and you know, I was a little bit overwhelmed or intimidated, maybe. Mm-hmm. I panic is probably the wrong word. I was a little intimidated with the, oh, wow.
Is this me?
Yeah.
Did I do that?
and some of it was just it's been a while since I've had a day like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
History isn't just boring names and dates. It's weird, messy, and full of what-were-they-thinking moments. The Buck Starts Here dives into the financial fiascos, questionable deals, and outright chaos that helped build America, $1 at a time. We mix in serious history from a fresh perspective, real, deep dives into the numbers and the moments that shaped the country, without the boring lecture. From presidential blunders to almost states, and the time an international war almost started over a pig, we break down the key events that made, and nearly broke, the nation. It's the fascinating untold history you won't find in the textbooks. Subscribe to the Buck Starts Here podcast for a deeper look at presidential history that's anything but dull.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
So to make that process and that outcome, to feel the joy, the satisfaction of following a process and saying, yes, I followed my process. So if we focus on I followed my process rather than the outcome, then what that does is it changes our internal state to one of satisfaction with process versus the outcome. And I think that that can make a difference for some people.
Rich, how do you do that, though? That's something that I've been struggling with, like trying to shift that focus away from P&L to process. And mm-hmm. I can focus on it for a while and maybe trick myself into thinking I'm celebrating it, but then somehow the P&L always creeps its way back into my mind.
Yeah, that's because our primitive brain, we either captured the game or we didn't, and we're going hungry.
Yeah.
So we have the lower part of our brain, and that is always trumps our thinking neocortex. So just like anything else, it's creating a practice of process. I have a spreadsheet, and it shows a client, and we measure what we call lucrative trades and lousy trades. And I think we've talked about it.
Yep.
A lousy trade is one that some part of the system wasn't followed. A lucrative trade is where every part of the system was followed. And so we track his trades, lucrative or lousy, And he was like down $15,000 in his lousy trades and up like $16,000 in his lucrative trades.
Yeah.
Duh!
Highlight what it's costing you. That's a good point. Every time it's highlighted, it makes a difference. Right.
So what we want to do is say, Kyle, my pleasure, my strength, my character, my identity is the ability to extract joy and pleasure out of my process. If the outcome after some sample size isn't there, then I say, okay, I'm testing a new strategy, or this strategy only works in this type of market, and I was trying to force it into another type of market. But there is no penalty. People look at the trades and, as I mentioned earlier, feel bad for every tick against them, feel good for every tick going their way. But really, and if traders could just believe this, all you're doing is testing a strategy. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah.
It's not your identity. It's not your hopes and dreams. It doesn't mean you're a good or bad person. You're just testing a strategy. And so what I do is I have another spreadsheet that every trade you make is assigned a strategy. And it could be impulse strategy.
Yep.
Could be the revenge strategy.
But when you can select all those and organize them and see the cost of all those revenge trades, then it becomes a little bit easier to not click
it. Exactly. Yeah. So we're just testing strategy as traders. And the market changes its mood. In fact, I have traders design a market that's going to be hell on their strategy. It's just going to rip them every time. For example, if you have a support resistance strategy, what it breaks resistance, stopped out, goes down, then hangs around, then breaks support and just does that over and over again.
Yeah.
Or if you have a moving average, a long-term strategy, when market all the long-term factors, you know, are in alignment, you buy, boom, it goes down. So test the strategy in different kinds of markets. All you're doing is you're being a strategy tester and the markets that it applies to. It has nothing to do with your ego, your future, or anything. And you can say, okay, I'm going to test this strategy in this kind of market today. Well, that's interesting. 50% of my trades were profitable, but it was 4-1. 50 of them were unprofitable, but the losses were only 2-1. That's an interesting strategy. I'm going to mark that down. So you notice the difference in my voice and my attitude. I'm curious about this strategy in this type of market. So that just takes so much pressure off. We talked about the theme being stress. Stress disappears.
Rich, have you ever been in a situation where somebody's lousy trades were actually profitable or more profitable than their lucrative?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Sure. The big example was during the dot-com run-up.
Oh.
I don't know if you guys are too young, but people were flocking to trading rooms and they were, you know, going with 10 grand and they were making, you know, they were up $1 million, $2 million, dollars, whatever. So it's a lousy trade because they had a strategy that matched a very specific market.
Mm-hmm.
But they had been rewarded for so long when the crash came. I don't think, I've asked several times, does anybody know anybody that kept their money during that time?
Everybody kept their money.
No.
Buy the dip. No, that's like the original buy the dip strategy. All you have to do is buy and hold, buy and hold.
Yep.
Put your order in a Lamborghini.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the strategy itself works in a very narrow kind of market. And for those people who got tricked into it. So, you know, the question was about lousy trades. The problem with lousy trades is there are times when lousy trades that your emotional system matches the market and you get rewarded for it.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my God, look what I did. My intuition is just honed. Oh, look. made another one. Now,
that impulse trade. Yeah.
Yes. So So all of a sudden, the market goes, well, I'll try again. Oh, I'll double up. Because you get rewarded for bad behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
My wife never, ever rewards me for bad behavior. So I am close to the perfect husband.
Bobby, you started to say something before I...
Well, I think one of the things that I believed... You know, you can believe something. You can have a mental acceptance of an idea, and there's a difference in that level of comprehension of a truth and then a truth working its way into the reality that you experience.
Mm-hmm.
You guys know what I'm saying? And so I don't think rationally I know that like my ability to trade perform when we had the room, or even especially now that I'm just, you know, doing what I do whenever I do it, as far as trading goes,
whenever I feel
that it, yeah, it's just all willy nilly out, longs today. But I always knew and would say, no, you know, trading is not a referendum on your IQ. Trading is not a referendum on your your ability to function in the world as a person. It doesn't, a losing trade doesn't mean you're a loser, a winning trade, but man, you go in front of a bunch of people and just, I mean, I had my fair share of bad days. I had a stretch of better part of half of a year where I traded just poorly. It was just a tough go. There's a lot of external factors during that time, but when you say that, I just don't think people, I think that's a thing that's easy to agree with. Like, yeah, oh yeah, I agree with that. And it's a really hard thing to function in belief that that is true.
Yeah.
So what's that? Can you be more specific?
That if I take a trade that doesn't make me a positive equity, that I am somehow dumb or not smart. Mm-hmm. Or that I'm a bad person, or that I'm a loser. I feel like that thing, it's easy for people to say they believe that that's not true. But I think a lot of people, and at times myself, emotionally feel feelings that would say, I kind of believe that's true sometimes, especially when I was trading in the room, when I was trading in front of people, when I was regularly on point. And I think that's so important because it is true. I don't feel a thing. I mean, I really don't feel much if I take a losing trade or a winning trade. Now, you know, it's just, it is kind of what it is. And I think I would have communicated it is what it is, but I think at the end of a long, hard day, one of the things that would have made that more difficult, and I say long, hard day, meaning a losing day, would be harder. I would experience some of those emotions like, oh man, you really just suck. You can't figure it out. You just fumble in the bag.
It's those hard days. No,
don't do that. Just stop it.
Yeah, just stop quit. It. Yeah.
Now,
but it is so
let
true.
Me interrupt you and say the yeah. typical response is more willpower.
Right.
You know, discipline. But my approach is different. First is awareness, which you just demonstrated very well, awareness of the process. Oh, now I'm feeling this pressure. Oh, I just noticed on this last trade that I was judging myself. Interesting. How's that thought going to help me? Not so much. Where would I rather be? You used the word invite, and you said that was an important word. How do I invite myself into a different state of mind? So rather than trying to say, stop it. by the way, there's a great video called Stop It.
Bob Newhart?
With Bob Newhart. Oh,
yes.
My gosh.
It's amazing. I love
Isn't
it.
Isn't that something? Well, that's one of the best videos on YouTube. Stop It.
It is.
Bob Newhart. Look it up.
Absolutely.
But if we can just be first have the awareness. Oh, interesting. I'm having this emotional reaction right now. Fascinating. Acceptance. We're not trying to put ourselves down because we recognize our brain is very primitive. Of course we're going to have these. Okay, I accept that. Now, there's a couple things that I can suggest my clients to do. One of them is to step into a corner of their house that they usually don't go, because I don't want to contaminate the rest of the house. And then what you do is you, whatever that thought was, I'm not good enough, I'm a bad person, I don't deserve it, whatever, you just beat yourself up. I'm just terrible, I'm just awful. And you yell and scream how bad you are, and you just go for it. So what we're doing is we're taking a subconscious thought, we're expanding it until we start laughing because that's so silly. And then we step out of that and go back to trading. So rather than fighting those thoughts, we go exaggerate them until the point is that next time that comes in, we step into that corner, but it's time to get the silliness is shorter, 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 until you have that thought in your head, you have that feeling. You say, oh, there's that feeling again. Oh, I don't want to go step in that corner like Rich told me. I'm just going to feel better right now.
Rich, can I walk you through an example of something I recently?
Sure.
I think an experience I had similar along those lines. It was a day where I was just kind of looking, like feeling just not good about my trading or about myself. And when I recognized that feeling, I actually like took the, I had the conversation in my head like, what are you trying to tell me right now? Is there something I should be worried about? I don't think I did anything wrong with my trading. So I actually went back and did like a little bit of a review, and I thanked myself for triggering the review and just getting me to look to check to see if there was something wrong. I don't know if that's maybe necessarily the best way to approach it, but I felt like it was maybe like, maybe you're trying to tell me something. Maybe I should listen.
Boy, I think that is a great approach. When you have a thought like this, you can say, okay, what's deeper? What's that thought? What's driving that thought? What's going on with it? What's it trying to tell me? Because always those kind of thoughts, even the negative ones, have a message from the past usually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a great example, Kyle.
Right. I'm always afraid. I got to get clearance from my psychologist friends before I talk about stuff anymore.
Because you got to get clearance. Otherwise, you're probably wrong. You're probably a bad person. But if I bless it, oh my God, Kyle's okay.
If Rich says it's okay, then I can do whatever I want. That's Rich said I can do lousy trades in a bull market.
We got the clearance, Clarence.
No, that's not what he said.
I don't think so. I didn't think that was it.
You guys are such fun. I tell you, I just enjoy this so much.
Oh, good. Well, good.
Talking about outcomes and process versus outcomes, and you know, that's something I've been ruminating a lot on the last week with a few different subjects.
Why ruminate?
Exploring.
Okay.
I don't know.
Just sound a little negative.
I like that. Yeah, true. Yes, exploring, because I'm trying to dig in and understand some of those pieces. And one of the places that took me was the origins of emotional tilt, especially in trading. Mm-hmm. And I kind of started down a process of saying, you know, while the trade is in place, while the trade is in flight, you know, you've got your trades, your risk is on, you've got your stop in place, you've got your targets in place. It's Schrodinger's trade. Mm. It's neither profitable nor unprofitable.
Until you
because
look at it.
There's no result until you close the trade.
Right.
But what happens is that if you allow yourself to become emotionally invested in the trade and you say, oh, if this target gets hit or this stretch target gets hit with this runner, oh my gosh, I'm going to have these results and these things are going to happen and I can this do this and all my dreams are going to come true. When it stops, it's taken from you.
Yes.
And you're crushed. You're emotionally devastated.
You couldn't have said it better. That is such an apt description of the process of most traders. So well done. That awareness is terrific.
Okay. What's the next step then?
You just go down the list. He gave us the list.
No,
you got to accept it. It's then rapport with yourself. Come on. Four steps, dude. You're fine. Just ding, 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 ding. It's that easy.
Yeah.
Come on, Bear.
Is this your first time?
He already said it. I'm just kidding.
I'm sorry, Furu Baba. I shall try harder next time.
Oh no.
Where were we at?
Well, I think I feel you on that. I mean, that you are correct. That is a common mm-hmm. adventure that people go on.
For me, that's that first step is that awareness is recognizing when I become emotionally invested in a trade. And for me, the easiest ones is, you know, am I willing to move my stop up to break even, or am I willing to move my stop in a profit? If I'm not, that tells me immediately I'm invested in the trade because I'm afraid of the trade ending.
Oh.
Well, you're invested in a specific outcome already. You've decided that the 75 points runner has to hit 75 because that equals success or happiness or
mm-hmm. self-worth.
And that's it. I can't go into profit with this stop.
I had to ask myself today when I was checking on a trade if I was willing to accept the outcome before I went and pulled it up, because I find that that's when I have the most trouble. I don't accept the outcome.
I think that is unbelievable that you say that, because I had the same experience. If I have had
long
one,
ES from like the 30
minute
high.
In queue. Okay. I was long in queue from the OR high right. after we broke down, and mm-hmm. then I had a series of trades, but the interesting thing, or a series of trades, I had a sequence of a trade, but what's interesting is you say that I had a moment, I hadn't felt emotions around the outcome of something, but I've had this has been a rather good week statistically and P&L wise. Mm-hmm. Just, I wanted to be able to celebrate it, but the week wasn't done. I did trade today, and I had a little mini meeting with myself because I was like, I've got to stop. Like, I know where I'm wrong. I know what my target is. Why am I looking at this like every couple minutes? What are we doing here? Because that
why
we
can't I walk
that,
away.
Went into that that stretch for a while where we just played ping pong in the pretty tight range today before the next leg or whatever. And I realized that if this trade were to go to fruition to the targets, then that would mean I could be done with the week and celebrate fully. Like, I could like fully celebrate the week and what I'd done, cause I was finished and it was done and good. And then if I lost the trade, I was feeling like I would be inclined, or I had the desire to find another way to be in a trade simply because I wanted to finish on a happy, positive note at the end of a happy, positive week. And I was literally sitting on the couch, and I was like, I was talking in my head and then went to the kitchen so I could say it out loud. And I was like,
don't contaminate the kitchen.
I was like, dude, if this goes great, if it doesn't, it's the same trade you took the other day. And the week will still be great. The week is, we can still celebrate. It doesn't have to finish on the P&L equity curve high or whatever. Like, it's fine. What are you doing? It's fine. Just let it be. Yeah. It's going to be what it'll be. Yeah, let's
celebrate
just
the process. Like, if we're my client's mark, every trade is lucrative or lousy. And even whether it was profitable or not the week, we can really celebrate they followed the process and made lucrative trades. That's where the joy is. So making the shift from the P&L to the process and celebrating the process. And do you know how powerful it feels to celebrate a process without the outcome, that you were able to do that? That is the Superman. That is the professional trader who's gone beyond. That is the highest level you can attain. That, and what you point out, it's not easy, but man, can we give ourselves appreciation and joy for every step in that direction?
I want to be mad when I miss a trade that even it was to process and it lost, but I'm still mad that I missed it because it was to process. Like, that's the place I want to get to.
What do you mean by you missed it? You didn't take it?
Like, I would miss the morning open or something. I come back and look, and there's like the A+ setup, but it failed. I still want to be angry initially that I missed the trade because it was a perfect setup. Like, I should have taken that. The opportunity, the probabilities are on my side. I know if I make this bet, three times out of four, it's going to pay off like that, you know?
Do you think that, do you think part of that, that bear that you were talking about, or even you, Kyle, where you had the meeting or my thing is, I mean, we accept the risk when we put on a trade because we have, you know, a stop of some sort. I would hope everybody would have something. So we in one sense have accepted the parameters, but emotionally we're not really, I guess in one sense, like we're not really going to be happy or fully accepting of it if it is a losing trade, quote unquote. It's almost like that belief, like the thing we were talking about earlier, where it's like, okay, the reality is this is a trade I should take, and whatever happens with the trade, the outcome isn't as important as taking what I should be taking. Because like you mentioned, Kyle, over the long term of taking a trade, you know that this has positive expectancy. It's like another level of acceptance to set it and just be like, if this loses, the setup doesn't go to profit. That's like that grind in there is just like, no, that's fine. Like it is really fine. I think
it's part of the process.
I have been pretty smooth with that. I feel today was like the first time in a long time that I had any of that. And I think it was just tied to the week as a whole. And we were meeting with Rich, and I thought, God, what if I trade poorly on Friday and then I have to go in there and he's going to shake his finger at me and then I'm going to look a fool. Oh, man.
Actually, you know, I wonder if there was some of that, actually, now that you mentioned it.
Probably was a little bit.
For me, it was getting the account, because I had a bit of a little bit of a lapse earlier this week on a new prop account, trying to get back into the groove of trading one of those, testing out TradeFunder. But, the Friday was just capping off, like, wiping up that whole mistake and actually, like, getting ready to start fresh again next week.
It's interesting. I'll trade live with my clients and I'll just kind of sit in the background. They share their screen. And I think only once did somebody pull a lousy trade. So the anticipation even of daddy being there.
Yeah.
So the question is, why is that? And that is, I'm continually with my presence inviting them to their highest self.
Mm-hmm.
So since one of the problems we have as independent traders is that we need to play a number of roles. You know, we need to be the strategist, the risk manager, and the executor.
Mm-hmm.
That's tough. Like when I worked for a large hedge fund, you know, they separated those. So if somebody tapped me on the shoulder and said, Rich, we got too much risk here, as an executor of the trade, I know I just had to take it off. So the other part is the invitation to our highest self. It's almost a spiritual thing. So mm-hmm. Can we develop that part that says, okay, Bear, okay, Kyle, okay, Rich, you are capable and I invite you to your highest self right now. You can handle the power. You can handle the incredible positive outcome. I'll be with you. You're capable. You deserve it. It's okay. So we're constantly inviting ourselves to the highest power. Now, the challenge, of course, is that, you know, we got to do this all ourselves while we're managing risk and in a trade and all that. But that's really a value to have somebody there constantly inviting you to your highest self.
So I traded a couple times with Cleo. We've kind of just experimenting around with maybe a new idea of just kind of talking through like the emotions of the trade, like as they were going through, just the two of us. And I actually felt like I was trading extremely well in that environment. And I think it has something to do with what you're saying. I was being invited to, I think, access a higher self than mm-hmm. I normally would mm-hmm. be just sitting there by myself. So maybe that's something that people should consider too, is just trading with like somebody you really trust, like one person, not yeah. like a whole group.
Yeah. And there needs to be some ground rules, because that can be, I'm trying to impress you.
No.
Or I don't, can't make a mistake here.
Yeah.
You know, so there's more pressure on you. Well, and so if they understand that they're there to invite us to our higher self, and that instant, that presence is always there for that, then I think it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. We also recorded it too. So that I think that made it, maybe that made the bigger difference, was knowing that there's going to be a record of what I look like in that trade that maybe made a bigger difference than just having somebody there.
Yep.
So were you actually recording your face too, so you could see your emotions and reactions in your face?
I can't remember if I had that set up or not. I think I was trying to, because I wanted to be able to see that. Like, that was
okay. Yeah.
Something I wanted to go back and look at and see how much tension there actually was there with those live trades. Then you can see if I can see the difference between that and sim.
Yeah. I look for physiology. If the client is trading, he goes
sitting straight up. All of a
sudden his lips go right there. Stop. How's your breathing? What do you notice physiology? Mm-hmm. What is your lip saying? Say, do it again. Exaggerate. Again, exaggerate more.
Mm-hmm.
If your lips had word, what would they be?
Fuck.
Fuck up. Screw this up.
Oh, man.
But, you know, what you brought up is the physiology. Yeah. Because the physiology tells the truth. Our words are often lie.
It's so funny. You spoke about that on...
That's the name of an episode.
A podcast, either this podcast or another. And I know for me, like, now I know for me, if I'm sitting at the desk, if I'm leaning forward, like, yes, into the screen, that's like number one. If my feet are crossed behind the legs of my chair and I'm like pushing my ankles together, that's like another a subconscious stress response.
I'm doing this as you said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know if that's how I'm sitting, if I'm in a trade, like I need to really, you know, I need to sit back and kind of float up to like 20,000 feet and get a survey of what has me feeling, not even feeling it, because the physical almost happens before a thought, really. And then I know what, like, the trigger thoughts that I have. Like,
who's
that will
this
clue me in to that I'm, yes, exactly. What dumbass would buy it up here? This is a seller's market right now. I mean, or vice versa. What dumbass would sell it down here? They should be buying.
No,
right.
Me. Yeah.
So, you know, I know what those are, but it's so interesting because it's almost like once there's a measure of awareness, and I love the layout of like awareness and agency, the like building blocks of being able to navigate whatever the situation might be, because it really, you really can just stop. Like if you're all wound up in a trade and like, oh, you can just end it. You can just stop it.
You can flatten it.
You don't have to exist in that emotional state.
What I really like about what you and Bear said is there's tells.
Mm-hmm.
What are the tells when I'm out? I have wrote a piece called The Cocky Clanger. And so, for example, if my legs are doing something like this, I'm leaning forward. Ooh, bang, 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 bang. Then it's just like fire alarm goes off. So if you can train yourself with those tells, and believe me, our subconscious gets really sneaky. It get harder and harder. You know, oh, that tells too obvious. We got to tone it down. but if you can develop those tells and have that alarm go off and say, okay. There's a story. I think I told it. It's World War Z, Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Zombie movie, millions of zombies all over the place. Running up the building with his family and kids, and a zombie reaches out and just scratches him a bit. He doesn't know if he's going to be a zombie and kill his family. So he gets to the top of the building, stands on the precipice, leans forward as far as he can, waiting for the tiniest tell. And if that tell feels like a zombie, he hopes he has enough agency just to fall forward. So, you know, developing those tells if you wait too long, for example, me and pizza, that second piece, you know, there's a point at which I lose my basic limbic brain. Once I've stepped into it, I lose the ability of awareness or higher level agency. So there's that. Just that tiny window of saying, okay, what is the tell?
Rich, does keeping like things like family and values at the forefront of like what you're like, what it's all about, like, does that help you maintain that agency in those moments? Because I don't like, I made it kind of light of it, but I don't think Brad Pitt would have been able to throw himself off of that ledge if it wasn't for his family being
family, yeah,
there.
Well, what you're bringing up is, what is our higher level? What is our mission in life? Mm-hmm. What are our real values? And I notice my voice is slowing down. And I'm feeling a little bit of emotion that if we're just trading for the Ferrari and the trophy wife, or trophy husband, I guess there are some female traders too, that then becomes an elusive dream that no matter what things you get, it's never enough, because you're trying to fill an empty part of hole in your heart. If you have the higher values of family, friends, the greater world, your community, you have a mission that you want to add value to those around you, then you can attach that higher level agency to that value. So you have something to step towards rather than something to step away from. Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl in the concentration camps during Nazi Germany. Those who had meaning, a higher level of meaning, were more likely to survive.
Yeah.
And I think for traders, those who have a higher level have a higher chance of success. And I want to distinguish that between those who are, say, they're going to be a philanthropist in order to assuage guilt. But I'm talking about your deepest values, what you care about. And when you step into revenge trading or impulse trading or doubling up or whatever the symptom is, if you have the higher value to say, this is what's important to me, this is a higher level meaning, am I serving that? I think that can fill the hole in the heart and give you the higher level purpose and motivation.
Rich, that was beautifully said.
Wow.
Can we end on anything better than that?
No.
All right. I didn't think so either. Guys, that is going to do it for today's episode. So please join us in thanking tonight's guest of honor, Rich Friesen. You can do that by clicking on any of those links in the show notes. You can visit mindmusclesfortraders.com. Check out all those deals that he's got going on out there. Pick up your own copy of A Private Conversation with Money. We will be back soon with another exciting episode. But till that day, please like, share, subscribe, all these things, and have a green week.
Oh, you guys are so much fun. I'd love being with you.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
At BP, we're not just talking strategy. We're making it happen, growing our upstream business with 6 major new projects in 2025. 4 already live, 2 more scheduled this year, expecting to add 135,000 barrels a day to peak production, helping drive long-term shareholder value. For more on our growth plans, visit bp.com/strategy at work.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only. It does not constitute financial or investment advice and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.